Everyone has an opinion. Who are your favorite sports broadcasters? We have Sports Illustrated media critic Richard Deitch joining us to talk about the best in sports media. And we'll hear from Alex Cora for the first time as a new manager of the Boston Red Sox. We'll talk about what he needs to do to make the Red Sox champions. It's Tuesday, November 7th. I'm Chad Finn, in for Chris Gasper, and this is Season Ticket. Welcome to Season Ticket, a daily podcast from the Boston Globe Sports Department and WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Chad Finn. I'm the sports media and online columnist for the Boston Globe and Boston.com, and Chris Gasper's pinch hitter today. Our guest is Richard Deitch, writer and editor for Sports Illustrated, and national media columnist. He joins us now by phone. Richard, welcome to Season Ticket.
Great to be with you, Chad.
Thanks for coming on, Richard. I wanted to ask you, as somebody who covers media, sports media, in a macro sense, sort of how you see Boston. You're based in New York. You have an eye on the landscape up here. What are your thoughts on the Boston media scene?
Well, you know, I have a particular affinity for the Boston media, and I'm probably closer to that city than any other city outside of New York. My wife's family is from Massachusetts. I've been in Boston, been around the Cape, been in many different parts of Massachusetts. So whenever I'm there, I'm reading the Globe, reading the Herald, checking out both of the big sports stations in town. So while I don't certainly have a feel for it like you do, I think I got a feel for the market probably as good as any outsider would have. And what I think it's clear is that there might not be a more passionate sports base anywhere in the country. The media is very, very aggressive, and there's a lot of them. So it makes for just a really interesting beat. The two local sports stations, they have a lot of power in the marketplace just because of the numbers that listen to them. Obviously, the newspapers have a long and excellent tradition in journalism, so people read them. It's a great media town because there's a lot of smart people, a lot of people paying attention and reading the media. And then lastly, I think it's among the most parochial sports towns in the country. So
that's for sure.
When you're in that town, you're getting so much about the local teams that there's not as much discussion nationally. Like, for instance, whenever I'm in Boston, and let's say there's a big college football game going on in the South, you're not hearing any of that on the big sports stations at all. You know, you're still going to be focused on the Pats or the Red Sox or the Bruins or whatever's going on. That's what makes it an interesting city. I mean, New York's a little different. You do get a little bit more national talk. I think that's just because of the size of the city, and maybe there are just so many people in New York from other places. But when I'm in Boston, that's what always strikes me, is they are just so into the Boston teams, and that covers the landscape. Particularly if you're a sports talk host in Boston, and if you're talking national stuff, you're probably going to lose in the ratings. Even though that's of interest to me, that's not how you would do it in Boston.
Is that parochialism unique to Boston? I mean, we look at the radio ratings here. We have two huge sports radio stations. They're often 1-2 in the ratings in the men 25 to 54 demographic, which is where the money is. And yet we have ESPN radio up here, too, and it's lucky to crack the top 40. It doesn't get one rating point. And to me, you see the success that like a show like Mike and Mike or something has nationally, and it doesn't register here whatsoever. Is that a Boston thing? Does it happen in New York with the two sports radio stations there? Is there room for a national program as well?
That's not necessarily a Boston thing in terms of the Mike and Mike part. You know, ESPN radio has a foothold in New York, but the shows that are successful in New York, of course, are the locally based ones. It's a show hosted by the Yankees announcer Michael Kay that does pretty well. But to me, what I found, Chad, is that cities, particularly on the East Coast, like New York, Philadelphia, Boston, Washington, D.C., Baltimore, the foothold of the ESPN radios and the Fox Sports radios are nil. They just don't exist. There's too much local talk going on in those towns where you are going to get blown out if you're some national voice like Mike Greenberg or Colin Cowherd, you know, talking about UCLA's quarterback for the 18th time. That's just not going to sell in those cities when people want to hear about Aaron Judge, when people want to hear, hey, is David Price going to come back? So I don't think national programs, quite frankly, ever have a shot in these big cities. They'll never rate, in my opinion. What I have found, though, from working at SI for as long as I've worked there, and because I've gotten a chance to travel the country on a couple different assignments, especially in college towns, that's where you see the ESPN radio really have a foothold. I was just struck when I was in Baton Rouge, sort of just for this example. I was at the LSU-Alabama game last year, and I was just struck by, you know, ESPN radio really had a foothold, and people were listening to it. You saw signage all over the place. And my sense is that because LSU is sort of a one-sport town, that, you know, national radio can come in and they can discuss national issues, and get a little bit of a foothold. You can't do that in a city like Boston where there's, you know, multiple pro teams, there's college teams there, and people are just so into the drama of the day-to-day Boston sports scene. So Boston and New York in that sense are very much alike. I mean, I don't think this is no genius prediction. ESPN Radio will never win its time slot in either city. It has
no.
Same with Philadelphia. It has no chance. That will be true long after me and you are off our beats and we've passed to the great beyond.
It will never register a ratings point up here, I think. But one of the things that we've talked about before when we've had conversations is that covering the media is, it's really rewarding because it's the fifth major sports beat, I think, and it might have even surpassed like hockey in terms of a beat. And the other thing is readers always have an opinion. They're always going to, if you make a list of the 10 best play-by-play commentators in baseball, you're going to get an argument. You're going to get reaction and response. With that in mind, the Fox broadcast team during the baseball playoffs almost got, not unanimous, but certainly rave reviews, especially the studio crew, with Alex Rodriguez being sort of the focal point there, the rising star. I'm curious, you look at that group, and what do you think it is that made them work? And do you think they're the best studio group that's going on right now? To me, it's still the TNT basketball crew with Charles Barkley at the forefront. But this is they really hit something here.
Yeah, well, first of all, in terms of covering sports media, Chad, I agree with your thesis there. And one of the reasons I like to cover other stuff like women's basketball or tennis or the Olympics, it's to take a break from the egos of sports media.
Right.
I actually use athletes who have less egos to sort of save me there. So that's always a nice break. In terms of the Fox Studio show, they have finally figured it out. I think they did even last year with Pete Rose and Alex Rodriguez. And I think the reason it works is because, one, you're stunned that Alex Rodriguez sort of would be this good as a studio analyst. That
he's a human being. Who knew?
Yeah, right. That into sort of his craft. And that's sort of, I think, first and foremost why it's just kind of fascinating, is that here's this guy, one of the most polarizing players in the history of the game. You know, let's forget about performance-enhancing stuff for a second. The statistics are there in terms of essentially nobody else has those, or very few people have those kind of statistics. So he's an all-timer, and generally speaking, you don't see all-timers as analysts, particularly in baseball. Then you combine this year with David Ortiz, who, again, fits into the same A-Rod class. This is an all-time Hall of Fame-type player, and you don't expect him to be, you know, a studio analyst, and he's sort of yucking it up and having fun. Frank Thomas fits into that as well. He's not as dynamic as those two guys, but again, all-time Hall of Famer. And then they brought Keith Hernandez in, who's a superb in-game analyst, and it just sort of has a wry sense of humor and is funny. But where it works, and I think, Chad, you and I are in agreement on this, is Kevin Burkhardt is far and away
yes.
the best studio host, in my opinion, Fox Sports has ever had.
I keep saying he's a rising star, but he's there.
Maybe with the exception of James Brown when he was running Fox NFL Sunday, who's a great, great studio host. But Kevin Burkhardt, far and away, is their best baseball host. And the greatness of, in my opinion, of a studio host is that you are ego-free enough to set your analysts up to star. You drive the show. You occasionally make an insight. But you know full well that the viewers are coming to see the analyst's opinion. And that's where Burkhardt is just great. He knows how to run a studio show. He's ego-free. He's fine if the other guys are having a great time and getting all the laughs. And in that way, he is very similar to who I think is the best studio host working, and that's Ernie Johnson.
Right.
Ernie Johnson has done that for 15-plus years with Charles Barkley and Kenny Smith and now Shaquille O'Neal, is that he understands that those guys are who you as a viewer have come to see. And he makes his points when he wants, but as a general rule, he sits back and he lets the flow of the show work. Finally, in terms of sort of ranking him, Chad, I would still say Inside the NBA, far and away, best sports studio show, in my opinion. In my opinion, the best ever. I would say College Game Day is still ahead of Fox's MLB show as well. And then, you know, you sort of start looking around, and you look for, like, the Premier League show that Rebecca Lowe hosts, a couple of the college football shows that people like Adnan Verk host. And then I would put the FS1 guys right in that next tier. You know, to me, there's, like, an A-plus tier with Game Day and Inside the NBA, and mm-hmm. then there's like an A-minus tier, and I would put the FS1 show there. But kudos on Fox. It took them a long time, and they finally figured it out.
I don't know if this is the case for you, but this is the nicest thing I've ever said about Fox, and it's actually genuine, too. So Burkhardt controls the chaos. To me, he's he's the guy there that makes all that work, even more so than A-Rod. But we talked about the studio shows, Richard. I want to ask you about play-by-play guys. This is something you wrote about recently on SI.com and Sports Illustrated. Who's your guy? Who do you think the best guy right now across any sport is at calling a big event game? To me, Joe Buck doesn't get a lot of credit. I think he had a reputation as sort of being smug when he was younger, but he's really grown into the big moment kind of broadcaster. He's nailed a couple of championships here in New England where the call he had was better than the one we had from the local guys.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champions.
But to me, probably Al Michaels is still the best.
Up to Schultz. 5 seconds left in the game. It's over. You believe in miracles? Yes! Unbelievable.
Who'd your first round pick be there?
For me, my number one selection, and when you go across sports, was Mike Emmerich, the NHL play-by-play announcer. That is a tough sport to call because, Chad, as you know, I know you've written about hockey, it's so fast, and it's sometimes hard to pick the puck up.
Yeah.
And Mike Emmerich is just an exceptional wordsmith. I've never seen a broadcaster do frantic better, and hockey has a lot of frantic moments, especially late third period with goalies pulled, you know, six man on the ice, things are crazy. He is an unbelievable broadcaster in those moments.
Ovechkin led it back across, and a shot by Schmidt. Save made by Fleury. Scramble there in front. Still a big pileup. The puck is still loose underneath of one of the Penguins players. Still they're battling for it. And we get Ahall to play. Not yet. It's loose, and a shot by Carlson. His save by Fleury. He's without a stick. He makes another save. And still another save.
So to me, he's the best, and I think he would be great no matter what sport he called. Al Michaels was second for me, still the gold standard in the NFL. Obviously, legendary career is called most sports, and it's called them at an exceptionally high level. I'm a big Ian Eagle fan. I think that's a guy who is
underrated.
So versatile. Yeah, he can do everything from basketball, does the Nets here in New York, obviously does the NFL for CBS. You hear him on the Tennis Channel. Again, it's a guy who's done the Olympics. It's just a guy who's just so superior in terms of calling a game and also uses humor, which you don't often see broadcasters do, and he does well.
And knocks down the jump shot. He was not in literally for more than 0.2 seconds.
You can only say Bob's your uncle on that one.
I don't even know what that means. Is that British slang?
There you go. You got it. That's what it means.
Kick it out for Teague. Off the rim, but you have to actually say what it means.
There you go. You got it.
There you go. You got it?
Exactly. Bob's your uncle.
I don't have an Uncle Bob. Uncle Marty.
And then the last one I'll give you, I think the rising star of play-by-play people, and this would be, I think, the guy who might be number one, let's say, 5-10 years from now, is Brian Anderson. Brian Anderson's on TBS. He calls baseball for them, and I think he's far and away their best baseball game caller. His main job is calling the Brewers for Fox Sports Wisconsin. He also calls now March Madness for CBS, so you've seen him do a couple of big games there.
Trip to the Sweet 16. Caney's got it. Rises up. The shot. And it's good! It's good! Wisconsin has won it!
He could call the NBA. He's filled in for Marv Albert on a couple of occasions, so you see his versatility. But that is a guy, every time I hear that guy, I find like I have been rewarded with just a quality broadcast, and in addition, understand sort of how to put his analysts in good position. So he would be the guy who I think could be atop that mantle in a couple of years. But right now, if I had to pick one, you know, life on the line, here's the guy I'd want to call any game regardless of sport, Mike Emmerich would be my guy. I feel like I could go to sleep that night knowing I'm going to get a professional broadcast.
That is a great choice. Mike Emmerich did some Pirates games a year or so ago. I never got
That's
a chance
right.
to hear
yeah.
those, but I would have liked
Same
to hear
here.
That.
I wish I heard those.
He's also about the most generous guy around you. Any hockey broadcaster you talk to, Mike Emmerich helped them out. Hey, Richard, thanks for coming on. You were great company as well. really appreciate having you on Season Ticket today.
Thank you, Chad.
His handle is Richard Deitch. That's Deitsch. Thanks for coming on, Richard. We'll talk to you again soon. Coming up, the Red Sox introduce their new manager. We'll hear what he has to say about bringing Boston a World Series championship next. Welcome back. A quick note, if you like Season Ticket, be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribing is the best way to make sure you get the latest episode as soon as it's available. Moving on, the new manager of the Boston Red Sox, Alex Cora, met the media on Monday. He talked about the excitement in joining the club.
To have this opportunity now is great. There's a good baseball team, a team that, as you all know, has won back-to-back division titles. But at the end of the day, in this city, you know, everybody wants to win a world championship. And for that to happen, you know, my goal is for this team to pay attention to details, show up every day, and try to take advantage of certain situations during the game.
So here's what we know about Alex Cora as a Major League manager. Not much. His slate is as blank as a Red Sox 1-loss record will be come the morning of March 29th when they open the season at Tampa Bay. Cora is the most inexperienced Red Sox manager since Butch Hobson replaced Joe Morgan in 1992. Perhaps that lack of seasoning is a concern in some outposts of Red Sox Nation. You can understand that. After all, you don't really know what you have in a manager until a dossier of evidence is built up over time on his approach and tactics. Remember when Terry Francona was just a Phillies retread, who arrived in Boston with a career record that was 78 games below 500? He's 214 games above 500 now. It's a pretty good turnaround. Right now, we have no guarantees where Cora will fall on that Francona-Hobson scale of managerial competence. But we can make some educated assumptions based on who we know him to be from his four-year playing career in Boston, 2005 to 2008, and what those who have worked with him say about the man. And those educated assumptions lead to confidence that Cora is the right man at the right time to manage the Boston Red Sox. Here's what we do know before he's even managed a game. He's an expert communicator who understands the Boston market and the mindset around here. More important, we know he has a knack for helping younger players thrive. We saw this firsthand when he was the utility player of the Red Sox and Dustin Pedroia was a young second baseman who was under his wing. Perhaps Cora is the right man to manage Mookie Betts, Jackie Bradley Jr., Xander Bogaerts, and Andrew Benintendi, the Red Sox young core, which struggled last season under John Farrell. We also know Cora is arriving from the most analytically advanced organization in baseball in the world champion Houston Astros. He's going to utilize whatever reams of data the Red Sox have for him. And he's also an ex-player who's seen the game from various perspectives. To me, this is the most important thing. He was a college star at Miami, a touted prospect with the Dodgers, a regular for 3 years in Los Angeles, a utility player, and finally a journeyman just hanging on. He's also been a broadcaster. I've always thought the I've been through it myself relatability to virtually any experience in baseball is what made Francona so adept at handling diverse personalities with the Red Sox. Cora seems to be cut the same way. He may never have been a superstar, but he knew how to connect with one. He was one of the few Red Sox players to get through to Manny Ramirez when the worst in his personality would come out. The biggest complaint about the Red Sox last season was that the team was unlikable. Yes, they won 93 games, but they didn't seem to have a lot of fun, not a lot of charisma. Cora has vowed to bring that back. This seems to be a step in the right direction for a team that is already pretty good and hopefully has the right manager to make them great again. And that's it for this edition of Season Ticket. If you liked us, be sure to tell a friend and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Chad Finn, and for Chris Gasper, he'll be back tomorrow. We'll see you then.